I've experienced wind like this a few other times, but it woke me up. It was so bad. It sounded like I was in a fucking hurricane. I don't know if we're going to hear. I don't think the mic will pick it up. I think the mic is it's too high quality, bruh, to be affected by this. The YouTube one. Obviously, the live show one is. But got really, really interesting show for you today. A lot of news to get to. We have some utterly ridiculous stuff that sounds like it's fake, but it's not fake. For example, it involves a beheading that somebody basically got away with. Wait, what? A beheading that they went through the criminal, justice system, and then it was just granted, like, okay, we think you're good now. Wait, what? The person beheaded somebody. So we're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss how the irony meter has officially been broken by a terrorism award that the CIA decided to give out. Big Pharma's fucking you in a bunch of different ways, part 9,000. How many times have we done stories about Big Pharma screwing you? It never ends. It never, ever, ever ends. There's a chilling new law coming out of Russia. I don't know if we'll have time for that. That's going to be later on in the show. If we indeed have time to get to it. And more disasters under Donald Trump, more ridiculousness from Hillary Clinton's corporate Democrats. Bill Maher, man, he's been off lately, if I don't say so myself. He had another silly moment on his show last week. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started here. And we're going to do that with a little bit of a conversation about what the corporate Democrats are trying to do. So there's been a bunch of different articles that have been released since the election of Donald Trump, and these articles are – oh, hold on. Fail. Sorry about that, guys. Technical difficulty. I got to start over for YouTube. My bad. So there's been a bunch of different articles written since the election of Donald Trump that are basically trying to nail down – who will be the 2020 contenders for the Democrats? And I have yet to read one that didn't make me sad and or angry. So I want to give you some of the names that they've been floating so you can also experience the deep, severe pain that I felt when I went through these articles. So first of all, the name that's probably floated the most, Tim Kaine. See, this is how deep the thinking goes among the establishment media people. They think, well, okay, it was Hillary Clinton before. Tim Kaine was the VP, so let's go with Tim Kaine because people know him. They like Tim Kaine. The progressive base would laugh Tim Kaine out of the room. There's no way he'd make it through a primary. He would get defeated in an embarrassing way. In fact, I almost want him to run just so I can laugh. Tim Kaine is for TPP. Tim Kaine is basically open in his centrism and moderation. So in other words, in the spectrum in Washington, to be a centrist means you're just kind of right-wing. So he's like a right-wing corporate Democrat through and through. Basically the antithesis of what the base is calling for and what your average Joe Democrat is calling for. They want somebody who's aggressive. They want somebody who's a strong liberal or a strong progressive to fight back against Donald Trump and to basically stay true to our value system and implement the things that the polls show that the American people want implemented. Tim Kaine is the last person. Never mind the fact that he has the personality of a burnt piece of whole wheat toast. That's what Tim Kaine is. It's a race right now between Tim Kaine, Chuck Todd, and Wolf Blitzer as to who's the most boring white man in the United States of America. One of them is the human version of oatmeal. The other one is the human version of burnt whole wheat toast. And, you know, sprinkle in graham crackers for the other one. Well, actually, graham crackers are delicious, and those guys are not delicious in any way. That's gross. I just used delicious in the same sentence as those guys. But they're just as boring as it gets. I mean, I would rather sit there and watch paint dry than listen to Wolf Blitzer say anything. The guy's never had an original thought in his life. He's a robot. He's programmed to go out there and do establishment talking points. And Tim Kaine is the same. He's, I'm the cool dad. I just took the kids to soccer practice. Anyway, let me vote for TPP and screw over the regular working people while I pretend like I'm on your side. Donald Trump, even with his record high unfavorables, I think would beat Tim Kaine. So that's the first one that's being floated. The next one is, oh, God, I hope you're ready for this, Mark Cuban. So the some establishment Democrats are thinking, well, you know, Trump is a bombastic billionaire who got elected, and maybe that's, like, in fashion right now. So let's go with Mark Cuban, our own bombastic billionaire. Yeah, here's the problem. He's not actually, like, a liberal version of Trump because he's not really liberal. So this idea of, like, let's just get our own billionaire who will also kind of do what the establishment wants. No, if you're going to run somebody who's like Trump in their rhetoric and how they talk and how aggressive they are, why not marry that together with somebody who's actually for the right things? Well, they don't want to do that, and they can't do that because the Democratic Party is beholden to the corporations and to the establishment. So with a guy like Mark Cuban, they go, oh, he'll play ball with the establishment, but he'll also be like our Trump, and he, you know, he's not afraid to be bombastic. But he, like, that's such a silly way of thinking. I get the appeal and the idea of trying to get somebody who has the same kind of straight shooter appeal as Trump, even though Trump is not a straight shooter, but, like, that has that aura about him. I get that, but if you don't have somebody who actually represents what the progressive base wants, they're not going to fucking show up. They're not going to vote for him. So, no, Mark Cuban is a horrible idea. But, again, it's anything to try to keep the corporate Democrats in control while trying to do kabuki theater and do acting to pull the wool over your eyes again and say, oh, no, this is what you want, Democratic base. So, but instead of delivering on policy and delivering on the things that matter, they're going to deliver in all the other ways. They're going to deliver in all the vain ways. They're going to deliver in all the ways when it comes to the characteristics and the qualities of the person as opposed to what they're actually going to do. So then we have Kirsten Gillibrand is being floated. Kirsten Gillibrand is Hillary Clinton 2.0. Now, they're trying to pretend like she's not, and she's being smart in that and clever in that what she's done is voted against every single Donald Trump appointment because she's thinking, oh, this will really get me some, you know, brownie points with a progressive base. But the problem, Kirsten, is that when we look at the rest of your record, that's an anomaly. It's an anomaly that you do the right thing. It's an anomaly that you stand up and fight for progressive values and say, no, I'm going to oppose all the Donald Trump shitty picks. Because, for example, she very vocally supported Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders during the primary, but she also waged really hacky attacks against him where she argued that Bernie Sanders is callous and doesn't understand the pain of the mothers who lost children from gun violence. So, you know, Bernie Sanders D- or whatever the fuck his grade is from the NRA, That makes him like a gun nut in the eyes of Kirsten Gillibrand. But it doesn't really. She's just using that as a hack attack because she was trying to bolster Hillary Clinton and put down Bernie Sanders. And she also, you know, she, as far as Democrats go, like I said, she's Hillary Clinton 2.0. She's a darling of Wall Street. So, no, that's not a good pick. It's not going to work. You know, now that we have the easy availability of information, the free flow of information online, you're not going to be able to fool the progressive base anymore, and they're so sick of getting burned that they're not going to take any bullshit. So if you go down that path, that'll be a disaster too. Now, the sad thing is that might be the most viable of all the different options that the establishment is floating. like Kirsten Gillibrand, she would actually be better than Mark Cuban or – ready for the next one they're floating? Cory Booker. It might be time for a revolution if they really try to get Cory Booker in there. Like, I think Cory Booker is going to run, but there's a good chance he doesn't get through the primary. You know what I mean? And if he does get through the primary, I do think Trump will probably beat him in the general. Because Cory Booker has this elicits the same kind of response from progressives as Hillary Clinton did. Like, Hillary Clinton could not get the base excited because she doesn't give a fuck about the base, and that was clear. It was clear with, you know, her entire career, her voting record, her coziness with Wall Street. And so progressives were like, you know, pretty much fuck you. Like, we don't care. Cory Booker, he just recently testified against Jeff Sessions to try to prevent him from becoming Attorney General and made a big deal about how this is historic that I'm doing this. No sitting senator has ever testified against another sitting senator when they were picked for Attorney General. And he tried to make a big thing about it. But then guess what he did like 2 days later? He voted against the Bernie Sanders amendment that would have lowered the cost of drugs massively. It was a bill to import drugs from Canada. And when you import drugs from Canada, you cut the price in half, sometimes more. Because here in the U.S., they can't legally negotiate with the drug companies for better prices. So whatever price the drug company says, they're just price gouging you, and you have to say, okay, I'm handcuffed, I agree to it. So it would save a lot of people a lot of money and get them the medication that they need. Cory Booker voted against it. Why? He took over $300,000 from the pharmaceutical companies, and many pharmaceutical companies are based in New Jersey, his state, where he's from. And then he lies and comes out there and gives a pharmaceutical talking point. No, 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 the reason that I voted against it is simply because, you know, I'm scared that the FDA isn't regulating these drugs. Yeah, let's go with that. Meanwhile, hey, dipshit, the regulations in Canada are even stricter. So, like, what are you talking about? This idea that they're just not safe drugs. Right, people are dropping dead all the time from bad drugs in Canada. He's just a liar, and he's an establishment shill. So the sad thing is, on the list of the people I've read, fucking Kirsten Gillibrand is not good, and she's the best of the ones that are offered. Let me give you more. This one's not bad for policy reasons as much as bad for it's just a weird, you know, sycophantic corporate Democrat pipe dream. Michelle Obama. This is another name that's been floated for 2020. Like, can we just break this dynasty garbage, please? Like, the idea that we went George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and then almost Clinton again, almost Hillary Clinton the next time. And so then you actually had Obama, and then we almost went Hillary Clinton, and then what? We're going to get Michelle Obama again, so another Obama? Like, why don't we just go ahead and shuffle between, the Kennedys, the Bushes, the Clintons, and now apparently the Obama is what these Obamas are what people want. Guys, stop making cults of personality. It's got to be about the policies. It's got to be about the issues. It's got to be about what they're going to do for the American people. And I honestly have nothing against Michelle Obama. In fact, there were some articles that I've read that indicate that she's actually significantly more progressive than Barack Obama and that she was an influence kind of pulling him to the left a little bit. So I have nothing against her. But there's something really sick about the idea that policy doesn't even enter into the equation of the corporate Democrats who just kind of float her name as maybe her. So the final one that they're floating here that I want to lay out for you guys. Hillary Clinton again. I just saw an article yesterday, Politico, titled, Hillary Clinton is running again. I felt a pain in my stomach. I was like, oh, that's like a gut shot. Oh, man, that's terrible. That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. Now, of course, the article, it's not conclusive. They didn't, like, get some sort of word in advance from Hillary Clinton, but they're describing how, well, if you look at what she's doing, she didn't say in her concession speech that I'm done for good now, and she just recently signed up for another book deal, and usually what happens is before people run for office, they do a goofy book that nobody reads, and then they run for office. It's just one of the things in the steps that people do. So the fact that she did another book, now they said, oh, well, it's like her seventh book or something, but hey, so maybe it's just a book for a book's sake, but, you know, they also followed through on shutting down part of the Clinton Foundation. Now, the part of the Clinton Foundation that they shut down is the part where everybody said you have to shut it down because it just looks like a slush fund and it looks like it's graft and pay-to-play and corruption. And so now they let that shut down. So now the idea is, well, she's going to run in 2020. And when she runs in 2020, she's going to say, I don't know what you're talking about. That part of the Clinton Foundation shut down. I don't know what you're talking about. As if, like, that still erases the rest of her record. And the $3 billion the Clinton family has taken from special interests in their careers, and the $625,000 she got from Goldman Sachs for that speech, for those few speeches. So, look, there is a chance she runs again. And if she runs again, I think she'll get crushed in the primary. I do. I mean, I would be amazed if that didn't happen. If she ran again and she didn't get crushed in the primary, I'm going to have to reevaluate my life. So anyway, I tell you that all these stories, and there are some, you know, better names that have been floated. Not that the names are perfect, but better than these by far, like Elizabeth Warren, for example. But I say all that to tell you guys, this is why we need Justice Democrats. They didn't fucking learn a thing. Like, people, you know, have been tweeting at me and stuff and trying to say, like, oh, yeah, hasn't Trump awakened the left? Awakened the left? Every single Trump pick has been approved. The corporate Democrats are still in control of the party. Chuck Schumer is fucking leading it. Nancy Pelosi is one of the top figures. And they're rolling over at every turn. And I'm going to sit here and be happy? Like, well, you know, hey, at least we're awake. But if your wokeness doesn't transfer and translate into getting our policy goals, then what the fuck is the point of being awake? No, we have to win when it comes to policy. And it may be the case that among the people, there's this anger and there's this fervor and there's this backlash, but we have to harness that into organizing and blocking Trump's policies and getting our own policies implemented. And right now, this is the fear. The fear is the Democratic Party is a weak corporate, you know, entity. It's a shell of its former self. So, you know, you might have this feeling among the people of, yeah, we're ready to fight back now, but the fucking leadership in Washington is taking it in the ass daily. So, no, they haven't learned a goddamn thing. If they had learned, and if there was really the unified backlash that we're talking about, the Hillary people and the corporate Democrats would have said, you know what, we were wrong. Bernie would have won. Look at the polls. Look, it's obvious. Hillary got defeated by this buffoon with a meerkat on his head. It, for fuck's sake, we concede. You have all this Robbie Mook and all these people who were part of her campaign, you know, feeling shame in a cave somewhere, reevaluating their life decisions. They're not doing that. They're still taking over the party. They're still in the fucking DNC right now. They just staffed Trump's war room with the anti-Trump war room, I should say, with Hillary people who were on her campaign. That's like the last people I would ever pick to be in that war room because they've already proven they can't beat them. So, no, they're still holding on to power, and these names that they're floating prove it, that they haven't learned anything, or they just don't care, and they'll rather self-destruct and do party suicide than correct course if it means divorcing from the corporation. So we have Justice Democrats to try to force that change. Guys, we're doing Justice Democrats out of necessity. It's not like we were sitting around and it's like, well, what should we do? I don't know, you want to try a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party? No! It was like, oh my God, if we don't do this, we're just progressives are going to get so thoroughly steamrolled that they roll the clock back fucking 70 years on all the progress we even made. So it's more out of necessity than anything. So Justice Democrats is the answer. We're trying to take back the Senate and take back the House and have you run. We're not waiting for anybody else anymore. It's you. Go to justicedemocrats.com. Nominate somebody in your community who you know, hey, I know this person would be a great representative, and they know their shit. Nominate them. Nominate them. And then we're gonna vet them. We're going to train them. We're going to run them. And we're going to try to get rid of the corporate Democrats. And we're doing it, again, because we have no goddamn choice. How will it feel if in 2020 your options are fucking, in the primary, Mark Cuban, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Hillary Clinton, and Tim Kaine? How the fuck would that feel? How would that feel? I don't want that feeling, man. There's been enough despair with this election already, and there's been enough despair with the way these Republicans and Democrats act already. So we have to fight back. Go to justicedemocrats.com, sign up. At the very least, just sign your name in support of the movement. At the very least, because the higher that number is, the more the establishment feels it, the more they're scared, and the more we make an impact, and the more we push them on policy. So at least sign your name in support of it. At the very least, do that. But I want you to get more involved. I want you to run. I want you to donate your $27 like this is Bernie Sanders' movement, because we're taking a pledge. No corporate money, no billionaire money. None. None. So it's a movement of, by, and for the people, and it's a movement of the Bernie wing, the actual base of the Democratic Party, who are correct on policy, to take over the party. And we're trying to bring about a situation where the Mark Cubans and the Cory Bookers fucking step aside and we rise up. Okay. All right, now let's go to what some of the goofy-ass Trump voters are saying. Public policy polling asked some interesting questions of Trump voters, and the responses are going to absolutely depress you. So let's start light here. Just give you a little sprinkle, give you a little taste of what's going on. They asked Trump voters, hey, would you support invading Mexico? Think about that question. That's ridiculous. Would you support invading Mexico? So you're thinking, look, okay, even among Trump voters, what are we talking about here? I mean, one out of every 100 people would be a ridiculously high number. Invade Mexico? For what? The number is 14%. So it's more than one out of 10 people that say, yeah, let's invade Mexico. Why? Because they got to pay for the wall now. You're going to invade them to make them pay for the wall. Like, that 14% of Trump voters, they're just openly embracing the idea that, yeah, we're the bully. We don't care. That's our whole point. We voted for the high school bully, and we like being the high school bully. Sorry. Okay, but that's just a little appetizer for you. Next, what percentage of Trump voters support a ban on Muslims in the U.S.? 41%. That's a devastating number. Almost half. Nearly half of Trump voters say, yeah, let's ban Muslims from the U.S. Look, I don't know what else you want me to call you. That is bigoted. Did you say, yeah, ban them because they're Muslims? But there's 1.6 billion Muslims, and there's so many different schools of thought within Islam. You know, there's Sunni Islam, there's Shia Islam, there's Sufi, there's Ahmadi, there's all these different schools of thought, or Ahmadiyya. They don't care about looking at the differences between the ideologies, and they also don't care about doing the basic intellectual exercise of, even if they're part of a more conservative school of Islamic thought, you know, maybe there's a chance that they just have those beliefs and they harbor them personally and they're not trying to, you know, implement a theocracy and take over the country. And by the way, Muslims are less than 1% of the U.S. population, as if that's a threat anyway. So, yeah, when you're willing to say, because ISIS and Al-Qaeda exists, I want to ban all Muslims who are coming to the U.S., then you are painting with a broad brush. And what you are saying is, close enough. Oh, you're an 8-year-old Syrian girl who's just trying to not get bombed? Well, we're going to ban you from the country because, I don't know, you're close enough. You share religion with ISIS and Al-Qaeda, even if your interpretation is totally different, and I don't care. So you're a child, you know, you're a female, you're an old man, you're deeply secular, but you're Muslim. I don't care. I just want to ban you. 41% of Trump voters. Look, I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's a healthy percentage of Trump voters who kind of overlooked all that other garbage because they said, hey, I think he's going to be better on the economy and jobs, and I lost my job in this factory town, and Hillary was loved outsourcing and all these things. So, yes, a lot of the people are genuine economic victims who supported Trump. But that doesn't mean these so-called deplorables don't exist. Oh, they certainly do. Because what other word can you use to describe somebody who thinks like that? I don't know, close enough to ISIS, I want to ban you from the country. Okay, then just admit, if you want to ban Muslims, oh, you don't believe in freedom of religion. Even though it's in the first fucking amendment, it's in the Constitution that you claim to believe in, you don't believe in it. All right, next one. 46% say there should be a White History Month. So nearly half. This one I just find funny, if anything, because people try to make, like, they do a false equivalence on this one. So they just say, well, look, if there's Black History Month, why not a White History Month? Yeah, so, you know, in Turkey, for example, if you have, let's just make it up here, a Kurdish month, because the Kurdish people are historically oppressed, why not a Turkish month? Why not a Turkish History Month in Turkey? Well, because if you have people marching in the streets of Turkey talking about Turkish pride, what usually follows that? That was the oppression of Kurds. That was the genocide of Armenians. So, yeah, Turkish pride in Turkey is very different than Turkish pride if it's a minority community in the U.S. or elsewhere. By the same token, I know it's an extreme example, but it's an example nonetheless. If you're in Germany and they have a Jewish pride parade, people go, oh, that makes sense. You were fucking slaughtered here. So you're a minority community that's historically faced oppression and you're fighting back against it and you're saying Jewish pride. If there was a Germanic pride parade in Germany, what would that be? That'd be a far-right parade because you're in the minority already. So there's a difference between the minority and the majority doing it. I know that that's a distinction that a lot of people don't buy, but that's the nature of reality. Like, historically, when people say white pride in the U.S., what kind of a movement are they? Are they one fighting for equality and justice, or have white pride movements historically in the U.S. been tied to white supremacy? Now flip the script. Black pride in the USA, what has that been tied to historically? It's been tied to an attempt at a fight for fucking equality because they were a historically oppressed community. So there's a difference. I know that people, they don't want to look at the nuances of it and look at the history of it, and they just want to say, well, it's got to be equal, white pride, black pride, and that's it. Well, why don't you actually dive into the details of it and stop being purposefully obtuse on this point? So, you know, again, I think these people are just silly. I don't necessarily think they're bad people for say, there should be a white history month. It's like when people say, you know, there should be a white history channel because there's a black or a white entertainment channel because there's a black entertainment channel. And it's like, okay, well, first of all, over 90% of the other channels are overwhelmingly white. Second of all, have you seen the country music channel? Have you seen the hunting channel? Have you seen the fishing channel? Pretty sure it's as white can be. So it's this faux feeling of oppression that's not really there. And people who are willing to be objective about it, I think, see that. But people who can't wait to play the victim, I think, harp away on, why isn't there a White History Month? You know why, but you're not allowing yourself to reason beyond it. There wasn't a time in the U.S. when white people were slaves. There wasn't a time in the U.S. when there was segregation against white people and white people were second-class citizens. There wasn't an anti-white Jim Crow. The history is the exact opposite. So maybe it makes sense to have a month dedicated to recognizing the oppression that a minority community felt. That's not a crazy idea, guys. If you really think that's a crazy idea, I don't know, you know, how to further communicate this. I'm being as clear as possible as to why it's not a crazy idea. All right, more. 51% say Trump should be able to overturn judges that he disagrees with. Okay, so now we're just getting into 51% of Trump voters are just flat out authoritarian. You know, no gray area about it, nothing up in the air, not a matter of opinion. 51% say Trump should be able to override judges he disagrees with. So you don't believe in checks and balances. You don't believe in the American way. You don't believe in an independent judiciary. You don't believe in judicial review to check the constitutionality of actions taken by the executive branch. You just believe in a unitary executive. You believe in an authoritarian leader as long as you get to pick the authoritarian leader. So you think if I get my guy in there, well, then everybody needs to step the fuck aside and there should be no opposition to my guy. Well, no, that's not the way our system works. And funny how you had the exact opposite opinion under Obama. When Obama was in power, it was anything and everything is legitimate to block him, whether it's the judiciary or otherwise. But now, judiciary shouldn't even exist because we think we get somebody in power and then they're allowed to be a dictator, they're allowed to be a tyrant, they're allowed to be a fascist leader. 51% say Trump should just be able to ignore the judiciary. That's insane. Okay, more. The Bowling Green Massacre is why we need Trump's immigration order. By the way, the Bowling Green Massacre is something that Kellyanne Conway mentioned multiple times to cite why we need to basically ban refugees and immigrants from these seven nations that Trump picked. It didn't actually happen. There wasn't a Bowling Green Massacre. There was, I think, an attempted attack that was thwarted. But she cites the Bowling Green Massacre, and 51% of Trump supporters say this is why we need an immigration order, why we need Trump's immigration order to ban people from seven different countries. So you're citing evidence that doesn't exist to support a ban of from seven different countries, immigrants and refugees from seven different countries. That's fucking crazy. By the way, most of those seven countries were bombing. How moral. Human rights leader of the world, world police. We bomb the shit out of you, and then when you try to escape to survive, we ban you from coming here. Dude, case-by-case basis, individual, vet on a case-by-case basis. We already have the most rigid, strict vetting process in the world. It takes over a year to get in here on average. There's biometric screening. There's a bunch of different government organizations that are involved in it. I think over a dozen different government agencies that are involved in vetting people. So vet on a case-by-case basis, they say, no, fuck that. We're just going to ban people, broadly speaking, from seven different countries. Okay, more. 55% of Trump voters say millions of people voted illegally in 2016. 55%. That is just completely wrong, factually not true. It's as conspiracy theory-esque of a conspiracy theory as you could ever get. There's zero evidence. There were, you know where a lot of people got this idea from? Memes. There were memes online where they showed buses. And they go, these are the illegals being bussed in to vote. Yeah. Voter fraud. Yeah. But that didn't happen. They were just pictures of buses. And then people slapped on, these are the illegals. The picture was taken like last week. Yeah. The fact that 55% of his voters believe that is insane. You know how insane that is? It's as insane as what was the number on Acorn? Like 40% or over 40% of Romney voters said, Acorn stole the election for Obama in 2012. Meanwhile, Acorn didn't even exist anymore at the point. They didn't exist anymore. They weren't around. But almost half of the Romney voters said, yeah, no, Acorn stole it for Obama. This is the same kind of shit. You see something on a far, far right-wing blog that's utter nonsense. And by the way, if there was some sort of attempt here, they fucking failed miserably now, didn't they? Because Trump won. But they can't help themselves. Even when Trump wins, they're like, yeah, but 98% of the population voted for him. So, Hillary still stole it, even though he's president. Yeah. They're so stupid. They find a personality and they latch onto it. That's what this is. I was noticing that the other day. I watched a little bit of the Alex Jones, Joe Rogan podcast. And it's so many views. It's almost 3 million views already. And it's so many likes on the video, and it scares me that many people can't see through Alex Jones' bullshit. And as Alex Jones says, I'm not here to carry water for Trump, then he goes on to carry water for Trump. And you could tell that he just latched on to a personality, and he likes the guy, and he keeps talking about how he's the real deal, and he's against the establishment, and he's draining the swamp, and he's against the elites. Alex, he picked fucking Goldman Sachs Steve Mnuchin for Treasury Secretary. If Hillary picked Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary, you would have said she's the most corrupt person in human history. And you would have been right. But Trump campaigned against that and then gets in there and is like, yeah, Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary. A fast food CEO, Poosder, for Labor Secretary. The guy doesn't even believe in the minimum wage. The guy wants to say he wants to move away from unions completely and move towards automation instead of workers. Isn't that one of your fucking New World Order conspiracies? That they're trying to stop workers and have machines replace you, and then you're gonna be even more poor. Poosder admits he wants to do that, and you're nowhere to be found. You don't oppose him. You latch on to the Trump administration. For fuck's sake, man, the conspiracy's right in front of you. What more do you need? He says he's not going to privatize Social Security and Medicare, and then he appoints people who are known privatizers to those positions? Alex, what the fuck, man? But it's just latch onto the personality. Same thing with these people. Latch onto the personality. Latch onto the personality. I like Trump. I like him. I like him. It's just how he talks makes me feel good, makes my feelings feel special. What they call all these guys call the liberals snowflakes, snowflakes with your feelings. You voted for Trump because you thought he was anti-establishment. Then he picks fucking Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary. And you still defend him? Who's the fucking snowflake here? You're picking personality over policy, you moron! Okay, and the final one. 82% of Trump's voters say he's more credible than the New York Times. Look, man, believe me, I'm no fan of establishment media. I'm not a big fan of the New York Times. They've gotten many stories wrong. They got many super important stories wrong. There's no denying that. But by and large, is the New York Times significantly more credible than fucking Donald Trump? Yeah, you bet your ass they are. And 82% of his voters say, no, fake news, everything is fake news, if it's against me. He literally tweeted, any negative polls are fake news. Any negative polls are fake news? So the American people agree with you on everything by definition? Even things you haven't done yet in the future, you know you can read the minds of the people in the future. You got a fucking crystal ball, dipshit. You're such a disgusting liar. That's what you are. And people are following you in lockstep. 82% fake news. Everything New York Times says fake news. Trump is always more credible than the New York Times. They've latched on to their daddy figure. That's all this is, and these numbers show it. Okay, I got to take a quick break, man. When we come back, we're just getting started. Jim Webb diagnoses the Democratic Party. Jim Webb ran. I don't know if you guys remember. He failed miserably. And then we get to former Hillary Clinton staffer. Tells us what we should do next, the protesters. That's cute. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. What's up, bitches? All right, we're back. All right, now we're going to get to Jim Webb. A bunch of people are going to weigh in on the state of the Democratic Party now. And some of it's right, some of it's dead wrong. And then later on, the greed of Big Pharma. Got some new details on that for everybody. They're ugly, but we got to learn them now, don't we? Okay, here we go. Jim Webb, who was in the Democratic primary for president early on, if you don't remember him, don't feel bad. Nobody does. He's the guy who killed the guy. Remember that in the debate? So I don't know what the question was that they were asked, but he was like, yeah, the guy who shot in Vietnam, but he's not around to talk about it. And we're like, what the fuck? You're in the Democratic primary and you're bragging about killing somebody? Whoa. So anyway, this guy did an interview over the weekend with NBC, and he had some critiques of the Democratic Party that I wanted to share with you, and then we'll break it down. So here's what he said the problem is with the party. When you can't have the Jefferson-Jackson dinner, which was a primary celebratory event of the Democratic Party for years because Jefferson and Jackson were slaveholders, they were also great Americans in their day. Something different has happened to the Democratic Party. The message has been shaped toward identity politics, and they've lost the key part of their base. You've lost white working people. You've lost flyover land. And you saw in this election what happens when people get frustrated enough that they say, I'm not going to take this. There is an aristocracy now that pervades American politics. It's going to be broken somehow in both parties, and I think that's what the Trump message was that echoed so strongly in these flyover communities. The Democratic Party has moved very far to the left. So, 2 points he's making here. One of them is 100% wrong, and the other one is actually right. So, let's break it down. When he says the Democratic Party has, quote, moved very far to the left, that's just not true. So the Democratic Party in Washington is probably the most right-wing it's ever been. Ever since the late 1970s, early 1980s, and onward, there's been a gradual creep to the right, and that's been because of the growing influence of money in politics. So Democrats are now taking corporate money and doing the bidding of the corporations. You have neoliberals who are in the Democratic Party against the conservatives in the Republican Party. So there's no real progressives, there's no real liberals. You have varying degrees of corruption and varying degrees of sellouts. So this is why you have even President Obama, who was viewed by the right as this far left kind of president. He did Obamacare, which is Romney Care or Nixon Care or Bob Dole Care. It was a right wing plan. He cut small business taxes over a dozen times. He doubled the size of the market. He cut public sector jobs. So when you have Democratic presidents acting like moderate Republicans from the old days, no, that's not a party that has, quote, moved very far to the left. The whole problem and why Hillary Clinton lost is that she was too far right. She was a representative of the establishment and a representative of corporations, and her policies and her record showed that she wasn't a liberal or a progressive. She voted for NAFTA, or I should say she supported NAFTA. She supported TPP. She supported and voted for the Patriot Act, the Iraq War. She's been hawkish on almost every point. She's been for almost all the trade deals. So her problem was that she has no trust among, you know, working people because her policies have been a disaster for working people. So that's the biggest point, and the biggest point where he's wrong is this perception that, well, the Democratic Party has moved far left. No, economically and on policy, they've moved to the right, and the solution is to go left. Where was all the enthusiasm in the primary with Bernie Sanders, who was the furthest left of the options. Now, understand that far left in the Washington spectrum is actually moderate and centrist in the population. If you go by the polling data, shows when you go issue for issue, the American people are just simply progressive. They're just simply liberal. They want single-payer health care. They want free college. They want to tax the rich more. They want the minimum wage to be a living wage. They want to stop all these unnecessary wars. So he's just wrong when he says the problem is that the party has moved very far to the left. That's just not true. Where he has a point is on identity politics. So there's been a bastardization of identity politics. Now, it used to be the case that when you bring up something in relation to identity politics, you're making a totally valid point. Like, for example, here's a valid point when it comes to identity politics. There was a study that found that when you have two resumes that are identical, one that has a traditionally sounding black name, the other that has a traditionally sounding white name, the white name gets, I think, over 50% more hits. So even with all the information the same, you have something that is not just by random chance. The numbers show that it's not just a random chance, that people overwhelmingly go more with the white name. So that is a form of systemic bias, and that's a point about identity politics where it makes sense, and you're saying, hey, there's a bias here that shouldn't exist, and we should try to address that as a society. There's the online sales study. When you have a black hand holding a product trying to sell it versus a white hand holding the same product trying to sell it, the white hand gets picked way more often than the black hand. We've covered the points on the drug war where black people and white people use drugs at a similar rate, but black people are arrested for it four times more often. White people are more likely to sell drugs. Black people are more likely to be arrested for selling drugs. So these are all identity politics-focused points that are just factual, where you say, okay, look, there's a bias here, that's a problem, and we should become aware of that and try to move towards an equality-like situation where everything is better. But there has been, again, a bastardization of that, where, you know, for example, you'll have activists who say, you know, we need a safe space on a college campus to get away from the scourge of white supremacy, so we're asking for totally separate housing where only black students are allowed. Well, yeah, when, you know, people in the Midwest, and when most people see that, they go, oh, so you, like, want segregation back, and you think that's a liberal position. So that's a bastardization of identity politics. We saw it during the primary when Hillary Clinton and her supporters accused Bernie Sanders supporters of being sexist Bernie bros. Right, the people who support the most liberal senator in our country, who describes himself as a feminist, and who is reliably, when you look at the policy positions he's for, on the proper side of the issues, right, the followers of him are sexist. No, you're doing it to make a hacky point. You're doing it to try to... It's a bastardization of the serious issues that actually cheapens the issues. That's the thing that drives me crazy. It's like when you criticize Israel and some people say, oh, you're being an anti-Semite. I'm criticizing the right-wing government of Israel led by Netanyahu, who just announced more land grabs, more illegal settlements, more occupation, further apartheid. So you're saying to criticize all those legitimate things. Well, that's, you know, you're an anti-Semite. It's like when I read an article in Huffington Post a few months ago. Somebody was talking about how Trump's rhetoric against Saudi Arabia classifies as Islamophobia. Wait, what? Look, you got me that Trump's an anti-Muslim bigot based on the fact that he wants to ban all Muslims from coming into the U.S. Like, I got it. There's a bigot there, right? But when you say, no, the criticism of Saudi Arabia is Islamophobic. Saudi Arabia treats women as second-class citizens. Saudi Arabia doesn't allow women to drive. You know, Saudi Arabia beheads people in the public square for drug smuggling and sorcery and witchcraft. They say all atheists are terrorists. To criticize them isn't Islamophobic. To criticize them is intelligence. So there has been a problem on the left where too often they pull, oh, that's racist, that's sexist, that's, you know, whatever, you fill in the blank with the specific flavor of bigotry and xenophobia. And when you pull that card too much and when you invoke it against people when it's not legitimate, yeah, you tend to to lose people in the Midwest. You tend to lose white working class voters who, yes, feel like, fuck, man, I can't speak my mind. I can't speak out even a little bit against the orthodoxy, social justice warrior, if you will, orthodoxy on certain issues. So he's right. He's got a point on identity politics, man. Now, again, that's not to say that all identity politics are wrong and bad. I gave you multiple examples where there's a real problem that needs to be addressed. But we can't have a bastardization of cries of bigotry, because then it's the boy who cried wolf. And then when there's an actual case of bigotry, but you did false cries of bigotries all this time, people go, ah, it's all bullshit. You know, how dare you call this person who's actually sexist, sexist? So many other people who weren't sexist were called sexist, so, ah, none of them are sexist. You know, same thing with racism, same thing with all the different forms of bigotry. So I think Jim Webb has a point. Now, what that means is the Democratic Party, and this is what we're trying to do with Justice Democrats, you have to focus on the issues and the issues alone. And if you focus on the issues and the issues alone, what that means is you're going to be able to address everybody's concerns. So, for example, where there are real issues and where there's a real point to be made identity politics-wise, where a minority group is being discriminated against, you can make the point in a way that's palatable to everybody. So, for example, like I just told you, the drug war is disproportionately used to crack down on minority communities. So if you say, let's free all nonviolent drug offenders because they're not really criminals, and, you know, 58% of the American people want to legalize marijuana. We have a lot of conservatives with us on this point, too. Guess what? You just made a legitimate point that includes a point on identity politics without having to feel like you're isolating anybody or kicking anybody out or spitting in anybody's eye or calling somebody racist. So when you focus on the policy, the death penalty is overwhelmingly disproportionately applied to people of color. So if a white person and a black person commit the same crime, the same murder, let's say, very similar circumstances, the black person is overwhelmingly more likely to get the death penalty. Why is that? Gee, what's the difference between the white person and the black person? Fucking skin color. So there's a real point to be made there about racial bias in the system. How do you address that point? If you say, let's get rid of the death penalty, we get the wrong people all the time. It's just an immoral thing to have set up. You can't be killing the wrong people. That's crazy. So if you make the point to eliminate the death penalty and you make it in that way where all you're doing is focusing on policy and saying the exact things you want to do, well, then I think there's no way we can be stopped, because the polls show that the American people are with us on almost every single goddamn issue. So the answer isn't, as Jim Webb puts it, the Democratic Party has moved too far to the left. That's not the case at all. The Democratic Party needs to move to the left because that's where the American people are. They need to move further left, but along with moving further left and becoming more of a social democratic party, which again is what the Justice Democrats are trying to do, your only focus needs to be on policy substance. I think it's also condescending and pedantic, and it's pandering to try to hit all the talking points. If you're a Democrat and you want to appeal to certain groups, where like Hillary Clinton would try to craft these things, these phrases where it's like, I am now going to make a point to try to appeal to black voters and get the black vote. I am now going to make a point to try to appeal to women and get female voters. I am now going, where you're trying to like, here's all my groups that support me, so let me try to craft this condescending message where I say, I care about you and I am talking about you. Do you see how much I care about you? No. That's identity politics run amok. What you actually have to do is only focus on policy substance, and then everybody comes. You build it and they will come. Focus on policy substance and you'll get overwhelming majorities of people who say, you know what, they're talking sense, man. All they're talking about is making the minimum wage a living wage, which helps everybody. All they're talking about is ending the wars, which helps everybody. All they're talking about is single payer, which helps everybody. All they're talking about is free college, which helps everybody. All they're talking about is you go down the list of every single goddamn thing the American people believe, and we represent them. That's it. Simple revolutionary idea. So the Democratic Party needs to move further left on economic issues, on social issues, and own that, but just nip it in the bud, the identity politics run amok, where there's a bastardization of identity politics, where you have, like, Hillary Clinton supporters calling Bernie Sanders supporters sexist Bernie bros. That's not true. They know that's not true. They're spitting in people's eye. And oftentimes when you have identity politics run amok, you're separating people more, and you're putting more people down, and you're never going to build a winning coalition that way. Focus on policy and policy alone, and move to the left on policy, and you win. This is why we need Justice Democrats. Go to justicedemocrats.com, sign up if you believe in this vision, and let's do our thing, man. You should run for office. You should run for office under that platform, under that banner, and we should take over the Democratic Party and kick out the corporatists and kick out the people who are going to use identity politics for nefarious reasons. Okay. All right, now we're going to go to Jennifer Palmieri, Hillary Clinton's staffer, and what she said over the weekend. This one pissed me off, guys, so buckle up. A former Hillary Clinton staffer, Jennifer Palmieri, gave her take on what the Dems should do and what Democrats want in the wake of Hillary's loss. So let's watch, and then I'll break it down.
It is incumbent upon me as an American to stand up and say Donald Trump does not represent what I view America to be. And I think that a lot of this energy is not the basis there, but you are wrong to look at these crowds and think that means everyone wants $15 an hour. Don't assume that the answer to big crowds is moving policy to the left.
No, that's exactly what it is. That's the dumbest point I've ever heard in my life. You know how I know that's what it is? The polls have been there all along. It's not me speaking. It's the empirical data speaking. It's you speaking. It's the American people speaking. It's the progressive base speaking. You know, there's a reason why Hillary's staffers are flooding the media now and making these points. They are holding on for dear life to their version of the Democratic Party and their vision for the Democratic Party, which is what? Same old neoliberal garbage. No, 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 don't worry about progressive policy. Vote for us, and we'll throw you some bones. We'll give you some sprinkles, some crumbs. So, you know, hey, we're for gays kind of now, even though I came to that way later than everybody else. Hey, we are somewhat socially liberal on some issues, kind of, sort of, not really. But anyway, do we have more corporate welfare checks for Wall Street? Can we hook up Wall Street? Can we give them more special deals? Can we let them exploit tax havens overseas? Can we keep doing this? So that's the thing. The thing is, the establishment is holding on for dear life. The corporate Democrats are holding on for dear life. And now they're desperate, and they're out there making these preposterous arguments that nobody can believe. Nobody can believe that. Oh, you know, I know you're out there flooding the streets opposing Trump's draconian backwards policies, but let's not conflate this with opposition to Trump policy-wise, too. No, that's exactly what it is. That is 100% what it is. Trump's appointing Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary. Donald Trump's first move as president was to raise taxes on the middle class for first-time homebuyers. Yes, people are flooding the streets because of that stuff. People are flooding the streets because he said, let's ban, anybody from coming, refugees, immigrants from coming, from 7 Muslim-majority nations. People go, that's an odious and stupid policy. We are going to oppose that, and we're going to go in the streets. But they're trying to see, again, this is just what they did with the DNC. And the DNC, you would think, you know, they'd be smart enough to go, oh, well, we fucked Bernie Sanders in the primary, so now we got to get our shit together and look in the mirror and understand that this can't happen again, and let's rebuild from the ground up. No, 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 no. They appointed all Hillary Clinton staffers to be in Trump's the anti-Trump war room. So all the people who are going to control the framing against Trump are Hillary Clinton staffers who already failed in framing against Trump. And here you see it. Jennifer Palmieri is a perfect example. This is how they think. This is how the DNC is going to message. This is how they're going to move forward. Now, I know all of you guys are out there and you're protesting Trump, but this doesn't mean you actually want progressive ideas, right? Right? And she has to say that because she knows Hillary Clinton isn't progressive, and she knows that that's not what Hillary Clinton wants to fight for, and maybe Hillary's going to run again. The pain in my stomach when I even say that. So they got to hold on to that vision. Hold on to the corporate Democratic vision. Hold on to the weak Democrat vision. Hold on to bowing to Wall Street and Big Pharma and multinational corporations. Hold on to the Cory Booker style of Democrat. That's what they're doing. That's what they're fighting for. and they've now gotten to the point where they just wear it on their sleeve. Yeah, no, don't. It's not like the American people want to raise the minimum wage. Except 80% of them do. It's what the polling shows. Most Americans want to legalize weed, 58%. In some polls, it's 60%. Most Americans want to have a single-payer healthcare system, about 55% want to do that. Most Americans want to raise taxes on the rich, over 50% want to do that too. They want to get out of the wars. It's only 17% still want to be in Afghanistan. That's more unpopular than fucking Vietnam. But no, 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 just because they're protesting Trump doesn't mean they actually oppose Trump policy-wise too. Doesn't mean they actually, that's exactly what it fucking means. The American people have been yearning for progressive change for all these years, for decades now, and the Democrats haven't delivered it. So this is a guaranteed way to keep losing, to go out there and say, we don't care about progressive policy, and don't conflate what they're doing with actually caring about progressive policy. Step the fuck aside, justicedemocrats.com. Look, what she's saying, that is literally the opposite of what we represent. So she's like, oh, progressive policy, no. You can oppose Trump, but just don't actually expect to do things that are good in response and do things that are liberal and progressive and help people and are what you want. Don't do that. That's all we're about. That is 100% what we're about. We want to do all the things that you want to do, and it's in our platform, and you read it. Virtually every idea in that platform, the overwhelming majority of the ideas in the platform are what you want. So you should sign up, and you should run, or you should get somebody you know who represents the community well and knows their stuff to run, and we'll vet them, and we'll train them, and we'll run them, and we'll get rid of Democrats like Hillary Clinton and Cory Booker. We'll get rid of these kinds of disgusting staffers who are like, yeah, let's not care about people and push for good policy that improves lives. That's all we want to do. Again, justicedemocrats.com. I hate to come out here every day and repeat this over and over and over again, but I can't just do these stories anymore and then end it without telling you that we're trying to do something to fight back. It would feel horrific to have to do these stories day in and day out and then not say, oh, here's what the attempted solution is. It would feel terrible to do that. So now I have to come out here every day and remind you guys because there's a battle for the soul of the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party, as much as we all dislike it, only entity that has the possibility and the reach and the infrastructure in order to fight back against the Republicans. I love third parties. I support third parties. I've voted probably more for third parties in my life than I have for the Democrats. So I support their battle. But yeah, facts are facts, and there's institutional biases against them. So that means that we need an approach through every avenue. We have to take over the Democrats, and the third parties need to rise up. But we are the ones who are fighting for the soul of the Democratic Party to get rid of people like Hillary Clinton and Jennifer Palmieri, because this is how they think. Ah, minimum wage, a living wage. Ah, forget about that. Just because people oppose Trump doesn't mean they actually want good things that'll like help their families and everybody in the country. That's exactly what it means, Jennifer. That's exactly what it means. Now, please, go sit in a cave somewhere and rethink all your horrible life decisions that led you to be such a corporate sellout. Okay, now, move on. Let's go to Reuters reporting on a new military disaster under Trump. Here we go. Reuters is reporting on a new military catastrophe under President Trump. They explain here, at least 18 civilians were killed last week in airstrikes by international forces in Afghanistan's Helmand province, an initial United Nations inquiry has concluded. American military officials say their aircraft have conducted around 30 airstrikes in Helmand in the past week. So they go on to explain here that these were U.S. planes who did the bombing, piloted by U.S. pilots, but it was part of a NATO coalition that was doing it. And again, 18 civilians dead. Now, as we discussed in regards to his first military raid that Trump did, there were 30 civilians who were killed, including an 8-year-old girl. Many women and children were killed. Originally, they said, it's okay, we got a top Al-Qaeda guy. Turns out they didn't get a top Al-Qaeda guy. So you killed massive numbers of civilians. Now, there's been subsequent articles about how that is radicalizing the population in Yemen even further. I mean, they've already gone through a lot with Saudi Arabia bombing them left and right, and, you know, you can see on the munitions that it says made in the USA. So there was already this anti-American fervor that was resonating, because you see that your enemies are being armed by the Americans. The Americans have helped with bombing as well. So, but this is a case of, there wasn't even the middleman of Saudi Arabia that did it. It was us that did it, and it was in the case of Afghanistan. So in Yemen, we learned now people are more open to the message of extremists, because, you know, they go, hey, look, I may have hated Al-Qaeda, but they're telling me they're going to protect my family, and my aunt just got blown up. So what am I going to do? I'm trying to defend myself here. So even though I don't agree with them, they're now more receptive to the message. Well, it's the same thing in Afghanistan. This happened when we bombed the hospital in Kunduz. Remember that? It was persistent bombing of a hospital where there was some bad intelligence from somewhere that said, oh, there's Taliban guys in there. There were no Taliban guys in there. We killed massive numbers of civilians. So when your argument is we need to be there to protect civilians from the big bad Taliban in the case of Afghanistan, and in the case of Yemen from Al-Qaeda, even though the geopolitical alliances mean we're kind of on the other side in Yemen. But when you make that argument and then you kill civilians repeatedly, well, then that argument falls on deaf ears, because you're saying, I'm going to protect you if it means I have to kill you. So you're not protecting them. And let me ask you a question. Why are we still in Afghanistan, and what's the definition of winning in Afghanistan? I want you to answer that question, seriously. Why are we there? And what would be the definition of winning where we could say, you know what, we got it, we're out? There is no answer to that. So originally it was, we're going to go into Afghanistan because we got to get Osama bin Laden, we got to get Al-Qaeda. Okay, we did. Well, Osama bin Laden's dead. We got him in Pakistan, but he's dead. And Al-Qaeda's wiped out there. So, but then they go, oh, but the Taliban's just as bad, so let's fight. Except, wait a second, Taliban is a guerrilla army. Al-Qaeda is a terrorist organization that actually tries to reach out and strike in different places. The Taliban, they're terrorists, but they terrorize the people around them. They're not coming to, you know, attack Kentucky or some shit. So, now again, that's not to say they're good. Of course they're not good. They're horrific. But is there a threat of direct violence against us? No. So why are you there? We got to hold the land and keep them from gaining more territory. Okay, but can't that argument be used for indefinite occupation of Afghanistan? Whenever we leave, they're going to take more land. Right. Whenever we leave, they're going to take more land. So what do you want to do? Stay there till 2100, 2200? Do you really want to stay there forever and waste resources, waste money, resources, and lives when we don't even have clean drinking water in Flint, Michigan? Our infrastructure gets a grade of D. We got all these problems here at home, and you're willing to waste all this money over there for indefinite occupation to stop the Taliban from maybe taking over more territory. No, this is Orwellian, man. It's like saying, well, we need it for peace. So peace is defined as permanent war. As long as we're permanently at war, we're at peace. That is a contradiction in terms. It's like George Carlin said. That's like saying, I'm fucking for virginity. What do you mean you're fucking? That's the opposite of virginity. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah, you're doing a war. That's the opposite of peace. Yeah, but we're doing it for peace. What? So it's in Afghanistan, massacring civilians, further radicalizing the population. We think we're protecting them from the Taliban, but we're killing innocent people, and the Taliban is going to get even more popular because we're killing innocent people, and they're going to take over more land. Doing the same thing in Yemen. And under Trump, I think it's going to expand more. I mean, Obama, 90% of the people Obama killed with drones were innocent. Under Trump, that's probably going to get worse. And then he's probably going to do more strikes, and it's probably going to be in all the countries and then some. So it's probably going to be in, you know, we're doing it in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya. He'll probably, you know, I'm scared about what's going to happen with Iran. He might escalate in Iran, and we might be at war with Iran. And the list goes on and on, man. I don't think there are any limits. We already had the apparatus set up by the previous administrations. Bush, horrific. Obama did not dismantle it. He put it in overdrive with the drone strikes and other things. The NSA spying, same thing. So now all the apparatus is set up, and you got a fucking megalomaniac, narcissist, buffoon, authoritarian in control now, and he's going to use all these things as his toys, man. That's what's going to happen. I don't think he lost a wink of sleep after the 8-year-old girl died in his first raid. That was a disaster. I don't think he's going to lose any sleep over this with the airstrikes that kill 18 civilians. Who cares? Who cares? Meanwhile, you further radicalize people, you may waste more U.S. resources, you violate international law and human rights, and there's no end to it. We already spend $100 billion a year on 800 military bases across the world. When is it going to end? When are we going to cut that back? When are we going to stop wasting our resources and our lives? When are we going to stop killing innocent people? And by the way, we all know a lot of this has to do with geopolitics and strength and power and the chessboard of the world and imperialism and natural resources. I mean, Trump said it. I didn't say it. He said it. We're going to take the oil. We'll take the oil. And look at that. I just appointed the CEO of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. Drain the swamp, my ass. He fucking is the swamp. Okay. Now we go to Bill Maher. Bill Maher sparred with Piers Morgan on last week's episode of Real Time, but there's a specific exchange that I wanted to focus on here. Let's watch and then we'll discuss.
You think our country is so innocent? That's what he said to Bill O'Reilly.
What's crazy about that?
Well, when I said it, they fucking threw me off ABC. You're right.
Do you think America's innocent? Seriously? What said about the Iraq War? Do you think that's innocent?
No, but I just think that
America has done bad things. Everybody.
Yeah. But how come...
So is my country.
Putin is a brutal dictator.
America is not innocent.
There's no
camp. Yes, but it was in response to a question when Bill O'Reilly said Putin's a killer, and he said, yeah, a lot of people are killers. You think we're so innocent?
I don't think America is innocent.
Right. This is something Noam Chomsky says.
Yeah.
It just shows that the Republican...
Is that good or bad? Sorry.
Well, it just shows the Republican Party has no principles. No principles. It's just about who wins.
Yeah, but it also shows that loyalist Democrats have no principles because you're also a hypocrite on this. If Bernie Sanders made that point, or if Barack Obama made that point, you would say that's just true. It's just factual. You just mentioned Noam Chomsky. You compared Trump to Noam Chomsky as if to say this is a bad point that Trump is making. I wish Donald Trump said shit that Noam Chomsky said 100% of the time. I don't want to discourage that. I want to encourage that. You pick possibly the least objectionable thing that Trump has ever said to attack Trump. See, this is why I get frustrated. Your resistance is going to fucking fail if you can't get your head out of your partisan ass. So you have to attack Trump when he does shit that is wrong. You can't attack him for everything he does. So, for example, when he axed TPP, anybody who is actually progressive and liberal should go out there and say, you know what, credit where credit is due. He's 100% right on this. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Let me just say, full credit, you axed TPP, I agree. So that's what somebody who's intellectual and consistent would say. Hacks try to spin it and say, oh yeah, well now because he's against it, I'm suddenly for TPP. Think progress. Progress said, oh yeah, no, see, he shows that he doesn't want the U.S. to be global leading power anymore. Oh my God, people who call themselves Think Progress, as in like progressive, as in moving forwards, now they're for TPP. Okay, so if you give him credit when he's right, like when he says, hey, I'm not going to cut Social Security or Medicare. Okay, hold him to that like Bernie Sanders. It's not just about opposing and obstructing, it's about holding him accountable. But you also, yes, when you oppose him, it makes it, when you oppose him, more potent. Because it shows that you're not a hack. So when he does something good, if you go credit, Then when he does something bad, you go, hell no. People listen to you because they go, I trust that guy. He gave him credit when Trump was right. So what you should be focusing on is the fact that fucking Trump is appointing Goldman Sachs for Treasury Secretary. What you should be focusing on is that, you know, he picked Jeff Goodpeople Don't Smoke Marijuana Sessions for Attorney General. The guy's one of the most conservative people in the fucking Senate. He's got a backwards record on everything. He called a white civil rights attorney a traitor to his race. You should focus on Poosder, the Ayn Rand loyalist who's going to be labor secretary. He doesn't even believe in labor. He wants to move towards automation. You should focus on the fucking executive order, which was the first action he did as president, which raised taxes on the middle class and first-time homebuyers. This is what you focus on, dismantling the EPA, all these horrific things. But no, you have to attack him on everything. Like, a lot of the things on the list, yes, he said those things, they're fucking crazy, and it should be on the crazy list. But here's what shouldn't be on the crazy list. What, you think we're so innocent? Because Piers Morgan is right, we're not fucking innocent, we're not even close to innocent. We did the Iraq War, we killed, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, minimum. We occupied a country that didn't attack us. We violated international law. We have 7 interventions going on right fucking now. We did torture as a standard thing. We set up a worldwide torture regime. We did fucking anal rape and anal feeding and hypothermia torture. At least 20% of the people we tortured were innocent, according to the Senate torture report. And that's just what they admit. Who knows what the actual number is? So that's the least objectionable thing Trump has ever said. And then here's the most important point. When Marr goes, he puts it on the crazy list, and then he goes, I was fucking fired for saying it. What he's referring to is back when he had the show Politically Incorrect, he said about people who, you know, flew the planes into the towers on 9/11. He said, look, they're evil, they're terrible, they're barbaric, they're savage, but they're not cowards. Because to fly a plane into a building, that's like the opposite of cowardly. So, but people misconstrued that as, oh, he's saying that they're not evil. But no, he was clear. You see the whole, you know, quote in context. He's like, yeah, no, they're evil. They're horrific. They're barbarians. But just don't call them cowardly because that's not true. So he got fired for that. He's arguing here, well, that's similar to what I said by Trump saying, what, you think we're so innocent? Yeah, but Bill, that's the point. The point is you shouldn't have been fired for saying that. What you said was true. Neither Trump shouldn't get shit for this either because what he said is true. Like, I get it. This is where partisan Democrats say, yeah, but we never assassinated our own journalists. True. So you have a point there. On that specific kind of barbarism, Putin is way worse than us. But that doesn't wash away the over 1 million civilian deaths in Vietnam in a war that didn't need to happen, where we were aggressive and we napalmed innocent women and children. That doesn't wash away the bombings in Laos and Cambodia and the ravaging of South America and the overthrowing the democratically elected government in Iran and putting in the Shah who let us steal the oil. That doesn't, you know, override the Iraq War or the war crimes we've committed in the Bush era, in the Obama era, and the 90% civilian death rate with drones under Obama. So it's not like you come across as a hacky loser when you say, like, you get outraged and you clutch your pearls over a true statement like, we're not so innocent. Because we aren't so innocent. We aren't fucking innocent. And Bill Maher has made that point himself a million times. But now that Trump says it, and because he's trying to oppose Trump by any possible avenue, now all of a sudden he's against the same shit that he used to say. Look, Bill, I'm not saying this to be a dick. And I'm not saying this to be pro-Trump. Literally everybody who watches my show on a regular basis knows I'm massively anti-Trump, incredibly anti-Trump. It's not even close. It's not even a question. So it's got nothing to do with that. It's about how we craft our arguments so that we win and we defeat him and we defeat the Republicans. It's about holding them accountable and obstructing them, not blind obstruction, but obstruction when necessary and holding them accountable when necessary. There's a difference in those things. It's also about making the Democrats be less partisan and less hacky and less corporate and less establishment and more issues focused. So I'm doing this segment because you're the boy who cried wolf now. When you say everything he's ever said and done is ridiculous and crazy and stupid, eventually people go, I got it, I got it, I got it. You don't fucking like the guy. But now even when he says shit that you used to say, now that's crazy all of a sudden. Just stop being so fucking hacky and gross. Just make good arguments. Don't make shitty arguments like this. You compared Trump to Noam Chomsky and acted like that's a negative thing that he said something Chomsky may have said. I love that. I wish Trump did that 100% of the time, because if he said Noam Chomsky shit 100% of the time, he'd be fucking Noam Chomsky now, wouldn't he? Wouldn't you rather have fucking President Chomsky than President Trump? So, it's just amazing how quick, like, people who are partisan, they just make me sick. Because, like, it's always playing for a team. I'm on Team Democrat, so now I will oppose Trump. Oh, he axed TPP, now I'm pro-TPP. Like, that's just so stupid. Who cares about playing for a team? You should focus only on the issues and the things that matter, and focus only on truth. That's it. That's all you should care about. But unfortunately, for people who are partisan, that's the last thing they care about. The first thing is I'm always playing for my team. And that goes for hacky Trumpists who defend their daddy even though he is the swamp and he's appointing Goldman Sachs even though he says he's against Goldman Sachs and the banks. That goes for them, and that goes for, unfortunately, people like Marr on this point where he's mad that Trump finally said something reasonable. Okay, next. How many have I done so far? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Only 6. Good googly moo. I got to squeeze in 2 real quick. The Washington Post has a story here that really highlights the greed of Big Pharma. They explain, an old steroid treatment, long available outside the United States, received approval this week for a rare disease that afflicts about 15,000 Americans. Though not previously approved in the United States, the drug, deflazacort, has for years been available to patients suffering from the devastating and fatal disease, I'm going to mispronounce this here and I apologize, Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Families can import it from abroad for about $1,200 per year on average. The new list price for the drug is $89,000 a year. After rebates and discounts, the net price will be $54,000 a year, said Marathon Pharmaceuticals' chief financial officer in an interview. So, classic example of pharmaceutical companies in the United States screwing you. In other countries, you get this drug for $1,200 per year on average. Here they want $89,000. Now, you have, unfortunately, on this point, you have libertarians and obviously conservatives and Republicans. They will break out every single, the ideological ones, not your average Joe ones, to be clear, but the ones who are in the party and the ones who are think they're intellectuals, they will break out every single rationalization and justification in the books, and they're, oh, but yeah, but you don't understand that there's, like, research and development and the cost of making it going up and this and blah, 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 blah. Listen to me. There's no excuse for taking a drug that costs about $1,200 overseas and having it cost $89,000 in the U.S. That's called price gouging. And understand, we have that right now with a bunch of other drugs, too. This is just a new example of it. We discussed Bernie Sanders' amendment to a bill that this didn't happen very long ago. We went off on it. But Cory Booker and a bunch of other corporate Democrats voted against Bernie's amendment. Bernie's amendment imports drugs from Canada, the same drugs we have here, but they're just cheaper if they're from Canada. Why? Because in Canada, they're legally allowed to negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies for better prices. So here in the U.S., we pay double, we pay triple what they pay for the same fucking drugs. So if we import them, well, then we just get them for significantly cheaper. That's it. So a lot of people can afford their medication that they otherwise couldn't afford. A lot of people won't go bankrupt as a result of this, trying to pay for fucking medical bills. But Cory Booker and corporate Democrats said no. So this happens already with a bunch of other drugs, and you have Republicans and some Democrats, the corporate Democrats, who are agree to screw you for the benefit of Big Pharma, because in Cory Booker's case, he took over $300,000 from Big Pharma companies, who many of them are located in his state of New Jersey. He wants re-election. He wants that sweet, sweet cash. So I don't care who I screw over. I don't care how many people die. I don't care how many people remain sick. I don't care how many people can't afford their medication. I just don't care. And we're watching this happen right in front of our eyes. We should all be out in the streets marching. We should do a strike. A strike say, look, the economy is going to ground to a halt unless we fix this, unless we get cheaper drug prices. We pay more for our drugs and more for our health care than every other modern nation, and we have worse outcomes, and we don't even cover everybody. Millions of people aren't covered. So you're just getting screwed. The system is just screwing you. This idea that there's always a rationalization and a justification why it's okay that you pay more than anybody else for the drugs, and you pay more than anybody else for coverage, and you pay more for your health care, and, you know, we have 45,000 people that die every year because they don't have access to basic health care. People are going to tell you, it's okay, it's okay, it's part of the system, it's the nature of the system. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. Don't buy it. The evidence is already there. If other countries can fucking do it, we can do it too. We've just chosen not to do it because of the corruption in our government. So you have to crack down, and you have to regulate, and you have to make it so that, I'm not trying to make people broke. Pharma companies are going to exist. They have to exist. I understand that. But they should be regulated efficiently so they don't get to price gouge everybody. Okay. Final story of the day. The CIA decided to give a literal trophy, an award, to the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Naif bin Abdulaziz Al Saud. And they gave him an award for fighting terrorism. Saudi Arabia just got an award from the CIA for fighting terrorism. Where do I begin with this one? Good googly moogly. So the whole point of the CIA, by the way, is covert operations. And we know their history. We know that they existed to overthrow governments. They overthrew the democratically elected government, Mohammad Mossadegh, in Iran, and put in the Shah, a dictator. And they did that because the Shah would let us jack their oil. They, of course, ravaged South America. You know how many? I don't even know how many puppet regimes to the U.S. were there. There were democratic movements and democratic governments, and then we went in and said, nope, too leftist. Overthrew them, put in fascist leaders. This is what the CIA does. The CIA was directly involved in torture under the Bush administration. This is what they do. They violate international law. They're the secret hand fucking directing a lot of shit around the world. You want to talk about conspiracies that aren't even really conspiracies? They're out in the open, that we have the record on it. We know the history of it. We have the documents. They've been declassified and everything. CIA through and through. So a terrorist organization like the CIA gives a terrorist government like Saudi Arabia an award on fighting terrorism. Orwell just spun over in his grave twice. I mean, for fuck's sake, man, this is breaking all kinds of irony records and hypocrisy records. The Saudi government is ISIS that made it. And I'm not the one who came up with that. There was an article, I think, in the New York Times a while ago that described them like that because they have the same philosophy. It's Wahhabi Islam, Salafi Islam, the most fundamentalist, ultra-conservative, right-wing, extremist, literalist version of Islam. So you treat women as second-class citizens. You don't let them drive. They need guardians to go anywhere and do anything. You have beheadings in the public square for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling. All atheists are terrorists. All the Jews are evil. This is a terrorist state. That's what it is. And they were involved, elements in the government, not the government itself, but elements in the government were involved in funding 9/11 hijackers and funding 9/11. So this idea of the people who today are helping funnel arms and money to jihadists in Syria and are arming al-Qaeda with the weapons we gave them in Yemen to fight the Houthis, the people who are spreading the jihadist mindset right now, that you give them an anti-terrorism award? Fuck off. This is just as ridiculous as putting Saudi Arabia on the UN Human Rights Panel, the Human Rights Council. Are you kidding me? They lead it. They lead it. They lead it. What kind of a joke is that? It's like putting Dick Cheney in the head of the Board of Morality or some shit. Or fucking, you know, a famous serial killer. What's his name? Charles Manson or some shit. This is just depressing. Trump, I thought you were going to drain the swamp, man. What happened? This is happening under Trump and awards going to Saudi Arabia. Anti-terrorism. I'm tough on radical Islam. Anyway, let's give an award to the biggest perpetrators here. Okay. I'm done, y'all. Love you. Love you. All right, we're going to see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Everybody have a great rest of the day. and don't get blown away in the wind if you're here in New York. Mwah. Love you. Peace.